Hello and welcome. I'm Laura Briggs with the Vegan Fitness Runner podcast, where I'll be talking all things running, health and fitness, and what it means to be an active vegan. My guest for this episode is running's nicest guy, Mike Seaman, the brains behind the National Running Show and an ultra runner himself. Hello, Mike. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. I'm delighted to talk to you today. I have to say, one of the reasons for me getting into kind of long distance running was running around my living room during lockdown, thanks to the National Running Show. So I blame you for that wholeheartedly.
That seems such a weird thing that we did and so long ago. The indoor relay, wasn't it?
It was. And it does seem like a lifetime ago. And yeah, the brainchild of you and the National Running Show. Like I said, that got me into running. But can you tell me what got you interested in running? Because I'd love to know that.
I don't really know, if I'm honest. I loved team sports when I was younger. I was rubbish. I was kind of like just about make the team. But if a good person had joined our school, I would have been dropped. I loved it. But then as you sort of hit your 20s or late 20s, I found it difficult to sort of be at a place at a particular time and turn up for things. So I just got a bit, you know, heavier, shall we say, due to my lifestyle and potentially drinking a lot and eating terribly. And I was just like, well, I'll do a few runs just to sort of try and keep myself in shape. And it sort of just escalated from there. I think it does. And then you enter a few races and you quite like it. And, you know, and then you meet friends who are, and it becomes the whole community. And I think I sort of stumbled into it, and the friends that I met along the way then just egged me on and amped me up. And it was the buzz you get from finishing a race and getting your medal and all of that stuff. And for me was just brilliant. And I just couldn't find that anywhere else. So I sort of got suckered in, and then one thing leads to another, and you know, we are where we are today.
And here we are. And obviously, community in running is really important to you. Yeah. And you've fostered this amazing community yourself now with the National Running Show. Did you ever anticipate how big that would become?
It's one of those things. I kind of had an idea in my head. And I talked about this loads. I had the idea for 7 years before I actually dared quit my safe corporate job and set it up. And I'd always felt, because I that's the thing that I think anybody, I mean, you're in the same circles as I am, and you know, particularly the sort of the longer distance community, but at all levels, the running community is just so friendly and welcoming and supportive, and it's just brilliant. And it always amazed me that there was no gathering for everybody, no national show. You've got London Marathon, you've got some of the big marathons do things, but a marathon is not accessible to everybody. Not everyone can run a marathon, and some people run regularly and they choose to run shorter distances, and some people run regularly and choose to run much further nutty distances like you. I just thought that there should be a home for them. So I wrote it all down in a business plan. I thought that's a great idea. And it was the one that I chat to all my mates about in the pub. If I have my own business, I'll do this. But I never thought I'd actually do it. And then even when I was doing it, I didn't think it would work. I don't know why. You know, when you sort of underplay your own ability to do stuff. I mean, I'd run events all of my life. I'd been in exhibitions since, you know, the early 2000s. Even the day before the first ever running show, when we'd had 20,000 people sign up, which usually means you're going to get 10,000 people through the door. Even the day before, I woke up and I was terrified that no one was going to come. And I remember walking around the exhibition on the first day, and I couldn't look any of the exhibitors in the eye. I was tiny back then. It was so small. We only had about sort of 80 or 90 exhibitors at the first one. And I couldn't look anybody in the eye because I thought no one was coming. And I remember going out to the front door and just seeing this crowd of thousands of people before we'd even opened. And I was like, oh man, it's worked. And it wasn't until then that I realized, and I was still like that on the second show. I was like, it was just a fluke, the first one, no one's coming back. And I still, every day, every time we open a show, we've got loads of shows now in, you know, in different markets as well, all about getting people active outside. But every show before it opens, I get that nervous feeling. It's like when you organise a party and you lay out all the drinks and all your mates say they're coming and there's no one there. And you're just like, are they gonna show up? Are people going to let me down?
We tend to do this to ourselves, don't we? We kind of line ourselves up and then we absolutely have this anxiety beforehand that people, like you say, aren't going to show up.
And I don't know why. It never gets old opening a show and having a crowd of people coming through the doors with smiles on their faces and getting involved in something that you've helped create. And I think I will never get tired of it. The running show will always be my favourite event ever because it's my hobby as well as my job, and it's the first thing that I ever set up on my own. I mean, it wasn't really on my own because there's a group of us that did it, but it was just, it's such a brilliant, for me, joyful event and a lovely experience every time when people come through.
It's fantastic. I mean, I absolutely love going to the running show. And like you say, it's because it's not just for one type of runner. It's not just for marathon runners, and it's not just for people who like doing 5Ks. And it's not, there's everything in between as well, isn't there? It's people who just, want to throw on a pair of trainers and have a go as well. So you don't have to be a runner to enjoy the running show. What else can people find there?
Well, loads of stuff. And I think you've hit on to, I wrote down a couple of key ideas when I was doing the show, and it was the two phrases, which is the first one: if you take one step, you're a runner, and it's no matter how far or how fast you go. And those were the two bits that we wanted the show to represent. And it was really key to me that we engaged the whole community. And commercially, that's good for the brands and the people that exhibit there as well, because it means that they get to target the full gamut of the industry. But I also think it was important that it was welcoming, because I think you're an ultra runner, you do long distances. But there was a time when you didn't, and when you were getting started, and we all sort of climb the ladder, and whatever that ladder might be, it might be that your finish point is running 5K. It might be that your finish point is running 200 miles, and neither of those are necessarily better or worse than each other. It's more about just everybody sharing that same journey. And what I really liked is when I started going further and faster is that the people who were better than me helped me get better, and they still spoke to me like I was normal. It wasn't like any elitism. And I think going to your question about what can you find at the running show, inspiration, kit, tech, nutrition, advice, races, those are the sort of the key things that we do. So we have like super cool speakers, like some of the coolest celebs that you'd meet, and they'll be divided into that inspiration and advice category. So if you want to know what the technical stuff is, if you want to know what these words mean or how to implement some sort of slight gains, etc., that's where the advice comes in. Or if you just want to listen to Kelly Holmes or Paula Radcliffe or Steve Cram or Mo Farah or whoever we've had over the years, they're up on the stage and you get to have a selfie with them, which is obviously the best bit. Then there's races. So I've done so many races because of the running show. I think I've spent more money with the race organizers than I've made from doing the show, but there you go. Then there's nutrition and kit and, all the stuff that you would find in the best ever running shop, all in one place at the start of the year. So I think it's pretty cool.
It is definitely pretty cool, as you say. And I think one thing that I take away from the running show is that I always come away with some new information that perhaps I hadn't considered. But I also have the feeling that the way that I'm going about it is also a right way to do it. That there is no wrong way to run, and that every runner is so different, and they have different approaches and different mental attitudes. But it's all very encompassing, and everyone can join in and feel that they're in the right place.
I think you're right, and I think that sense of community, the running show just personifies community, but also that everybody is different and that you can all come together with the same shared passion and shared interest. Nutrition is a classic for that. What works for you will not work for me and will not work for the next person, but we all take little bits from each other and you've got to just try. There are some basic things that you can do that are pretty sensible, but actually what you like and what you isn't going to be the same as what I like. You feel very differently from me because of your dietary choices versus my dietary choices, and that's okay. That's fine. There's room for everyone.
Absolutely. And one thing that you as a show have definitely focused on is being able to cater for the masses and cater for all, you know, all vegans as well out there, as well as non-vegans. Yep. But your choices are very much based on kind of sustainability, aren't they, Mike? And how have you kind of, you know, come across a way to make your show more sustainable with all those thousands of people coming through your door?
Well, I'm quite passionate about it. I think it's, you know, I've got kids and I want to leave them a planet that's in a better condition than the one that was given to me. And if we all do a little bit, then it adds up to a lot. That's the theory. I'm very motivated to do something, but it's really hard. And if you go out there and say you're sustainable, there's 10,000 keyboard warriors telling you that you're not because you haven't done this. And that's actually quite scary, I think, for brands and companies, because you almost end up doing nothing because you're too scared of doing it wrong. And our philosophy has been very different. And I'm like, look, we're doing it, guys. We're gonna go for it. We're going to be as sustainable as we can. And there will always be something that we do wrong. But if we make things a little bit better every single time we do it, then eventually that will be a positive swing, as opposed to sitting there and doing nothing because we're too scared and everything stays the same. So for us, we've focused on carbon. So we want to be net zero, which is, so you can be carbon neutral or net zero, and there's differences between the two, and I can get really boring if you want to, but we want to be net zero. You have to measure everything that you do, and then you have to try and reduce it and eventually offset it by planting trees. But you have to continuously reduce and continuously improve. There's little things that we do, like we took away the goodie bags and all the plastic bags. So we don't do those anymore. That made a massive difference. We took out the aisle carpet in the shows, which saved us 20 tons of CO2 per show. We do stuff like offset travel. We do stuff like encourage people to travel in more sustainable ways. It's what's difficult is when you start, we even looked at catering. I don't know if you remember one year we put the Central Cafe vegan we didn't make it the only choice because we didn't want to limit, but half of our food at that show in the main Central Cafe was vegan because we wanted to encourage people to think about sustainably sourced and locally sourced. We work with a venue who've got stuff around renewable power and zero waste to landfill, and it's so there's lots of stuff like that going on. Are we experts in sustainability? Absolutely not. I spend a fortune on it. But I think we're making a bit of a difference, and you know, other people are starting to do it as well across the exhibition industry, which is nice to see. So trying to be a force for good is part of our ethos as a business. So you'll see we do the grants where we give money back. So there's a community grant and there's an elite sport grant. There's the sustainability angle, there's the DEI stuff we do. It's all just to try and be a good company. And I think when I set this up, I did it because I love it. And now I'm like, well, I've got this platform. What am I going to do with it? Am I just going to sit there like a dragon making loads of money and sitting on a pile of gold? Or am I going to try and, you know, share the love and put it back into the communities that we work in? And I really believe that that's the correct approach. You know, it does mean that I'm not getting rich off this and I don't have a boat. But who cares?
Who needs a boat? You just run. That's all you need to do, Mike. Just run.
If anybody listening wants to give me a boat,
I'm sure they're lining up actually as we speak. You said about kind of putting your head above the parapet and doing things differently. And that's when people start to notice that you've done something differently. You mentioned about, you know, removing all the carpets from the show and, you know, adding, you know, just a vegan restaurant in the middle. And it's times like that, isn't it, when people suddenly think, oh, this is different, I'm not sure if I like it, or it's this not the right way to do things. Do you find when you make those changes initially that people maybe put in more complaints, or you have a bit of resistance from the community?
Most people have been supportive of what we've done. I remember when the vegan cafe, that was a classic. So I thought everybody would be really supportive because we had two cafes in the show. So it wasn't the only food option. And there was one guy who was really horrified by this and complaining on social media. And I dealt with it and was sort of messaging back and forth. And I was like, look, I'm really sorry. I said, look, I'll come to the show and I'll show you where the other catering offerings are, and you know, I'll talk you through it. He's like, oh, I'm not coming to the show. And I was like, oh, it's like, why are you so mad about it then if you're not even coming? And it was, and it just sort of really sparked a note in me that you've got to be careful on social media, that the voices that you hear aren't necessarily representative of everybody. And I think with the carpets, so we wanted to take the carpets out of everything, but we now leave them in on some of the key feature areas, partly because of our accessibility piece, because you've got to think about other things like sound reverberation and people who are hard of hearing, which is, you know, it's somewhere around 45% of the UK population. So it's a significant amount. I may have to check that stat, but it's a big amount. So if you don't put something in to dampen and absorb the sound, then they can't hear the content as well. So there are all of these unintended consequences that you don't think of. But I think the only way you learn and adapt and evolve is by trying new stuff. So if we just sat there and did the same thing the same way, then nothing's going to improve. So I'm willing to try. I'm also willing to admit when I get it wrong. And I think that's important.
What's really good, Mike, is that you obviously have done your research on a lot of this stuff. And it sounds to me that by making kind of smaller changes or one or two changes is often better than just trying to go all out and maybe kind of mess it up in the trying to do it. Do you see that as a better way of running your shows, like changing things bit by bit and getting there in the end, rather than just trying to make everything 100% sustainable and maybe fumbling along the way?
That stat, by the way, it's 12 million people in the UK who are hard of hearing. So it's a lot, isn't it? But yes, to answer your question, I think do lots of things, try lots of things. I don't think necessarily just try small things. I think try big things. Don't be scared of anything, but don't just do one thing, because if it doesn't work, then, you know, you've wasted your time.
And also don't be scared of the people that are going to be negative, because I guess you're always going to have that no matter what you try.
Yeah, I think you just have to consult people. It's, you know, the running show is not my show. It belongs to the running community. And if the running community don't care about what I'm caring about, then I need to listen and not do it. But I know that the running community is passionate about sustainability. I know they want us to do it. I just don't know what they want us to do. So my job is to continuously try new things, show it to them, and then see what the feedback is. And if they tell me it was a rubbish idea, and it's not just one person on social media who hasn't actually been to the show, then I'll stop doing it. But it's just try things, really.
Great philosophy. Now, listen, tell me more about your running. How often do you run these days?
Well, I do quite a bit. I probably do about 30 miles a week on a normal week. And then I've started. I mean, I'm not a very good runner. I'm kind of quite mediocre, but I'm kind of quite good at sort of going for longer distances, and I can do that. The ultra runners look at me. I'm a very much a middle of the pack ultra runner, if that. But I've done a few hundred milers. I just did a 30 miler at the weekend, actually, the Pegasus Ultra Running Howham in Wales. That was mega. It was 30 miles, but it was like 4,500 feet of incline.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, that was hectic. But it was so much fun, and I just love it. For me, my passion is in ultra running. And actually, I get to run with, like, I've become friends with loads of really, like, good runners now. So I run a lot with Susie Chan, and she's obviously phenomenal. So we went out and did a 100 miler in Florida in December, which sounds really glamorous, doesn't it?
It does. I went it does.
With, like, a super cool, like, and she's a good friend of mine, and she's obviously a much better runner than me, and she finished a lot quicker than I did. But we all went out. There's a group of us, and our other friend Emma, she ran the 50 and was super fast. And then we had John and Sean crewing us. And they, you know, I hang around with all of these people who are super good runners, and they sort of take pity on me. I'm sort of like the one that they just drag along around at the end. But that was really fun. And then actually myself and Susie Shaw are doing a challenge later this month where we're running 4 ultra marathons in 4 days. Susie's very passionate about mental health, as am I. And there's this horrible stat at the moment from Mind, which is about 1 in 4 people are diagnosed with a mental health condition every single year. So we wanted to just put a bit of a spotlight on that and say that kind of mental health can hit anybody. So we were kind of like, well, how do we do that and make it into a running challenge? Because obviously everything has to be a running challenge.
Naturally.
So we're like, okay, well, we're going to run four ultramarathons in 4 days, but we'll roll a dice at the start of each day. And if it'll be the equivalent of a four-sided dice. So we've taken out, we've got one to four, and then we've got two roll agains. And if we hit a one, then we have to run 50 miles. If we hit a two, three, or a four, we run 30 miles, with the idea being that if you have a mental health concern or condition, then you don't know what kind of day you're going to have at the start of the day. So we don't find out how far we're running until the morning. So it could be 200 miles, it could be 120 miles, I don't know. But that's going to be fun.
I'd actually wondered about that rolling the dice philosophy and what the thinking was behind it, but that makes total sense, doesn't it? That if you're suffering from mental health issues, that you don't know how you're going to feel from one day to the next. So that now makes complete sense as to why you would kind of implement that in your challenge. And it's a really clever way of throwing a spotlight on mental health, which is brilliant.
And I think, we also we're making a documentary about it, and we're going around and we're interviewing people, and there are some people from who are quite sort of famous celebrities who you really wouldn't think would suffer with their mental health, and they do, and it really just opens it up. And what we want to do is normalize the conversation around it and just say it's okay, and it's not a sign of weakness. We would one of the guys who I found really inspirational, Martin Ford, he basically talks about mental strength, and he's been quite open about his eating disorders that he's had in the past. I mean, this guy's about 19 feet tall and built like a tank, and looks terrifying if you were to meet him in a dark alleyway, but is actually the loveliest man you could ever meet, and was very, very open about the eating disorders that he suffered. And I just thought, actually, to have someone like that who isn't somebody you would conventionally hear talking about mental health, he's a very strong, very successful person, I think it's quite important, because I think you're saying, actually, you can have mental health struggles, but you can be a perfectly successful, perfectly valid, incredibly popular and lovely human being. So I thought that was quite important. That motivated me anyway.
Brilliant. And I think in sports, running for sure, but sports in general, that people, they're proving themselves in a way that is measured totally on their successes in their sports, but they're hiding a lot of vulnerabilities, aren't they? Which, most of us don't get to see day in, day out. And by mixing with runners and other sports people and kind of scratching under the surfaces, you realize that they're normal people, and they have vulnerabilities and they have mental health issues, like most of us do in some way or another. And it's important to talk about that, isn't it?
Well, yeah, especially like it, I love Instagram, but it also presents a very glossy view of everyone's life. And you can look at these people and think, gosh, aren't they successful, amazing, and perfect? And actually, one in four. So you know that one in four of those accounts that you're looking at, there's something going on under the water, and it might even be more than that. That's diagnosed. So I think it's very easy to judge people based on a glossy veneer as to what you see perhaps online or in short engagements. But I think we all need to just sort of be aware of what's going on, and reflective of our own selves and our own positions, and just making sure that you're all looking after each other and stuff and being nice.
That's a really important message, isn't it? And I think a lot of the reason people do a lot of running is, to clear their heads and get a little bit of space for themselves. And it's really good for mental health and feeling positive, isn't it? Do you feel like that after a run? Do you feel like you've done some good for your mind?
100%. I believe that endorphins and physical activity and being outside in particular are incredibly important for mental well-being, and I don't think you ever feel bad after you've done a run. Well, it depends how hard
I
the
beg
run
to
was.
differ.
I was going to say, after a few hundred miles, I felt pretty rough, but I think mentally, I'm stronger after every single run that I do. It helps me approach my day better. It helps calm me. I can be a bit rash if I don't have some kind of a release. And I think I'm just a much sort of better and nicer person if I've run. It helps me process the day ahead if I've got it's quite stressful, my job, because it's, you know, there's lots of spinning plates, and you know, we've got 9 events now in here in the States, and we've got 30 people in the company, and then I've got 2 kids, and I've got running and ultras and all that. There's a lot going on. And if I find, actually, if I go for a run in the morning, I can deal with a lot of that. I can process and plan my day, and I'm actually just a calmer, nicer person when I've got back. And I love running. I think it's so good for me. And I sometimes I like to do it on my own because I think that's good for headspace. And then sometimes I like to do it with people because you just get to know people better on a run. And you have kind of quite real conversations. And I think, you know, we often, most of our conversations, or most of my conversations in my 20s, probably took place in a pub. And they're not real. Whereas actually when you're out on the trails, you sort of, you talk about real stuff.
Yeah, you do. You talk about kind of gritty stuff that you probably wouldn't normally tell anybody in real life, shall we say. That's
what I think you're a lot more open and, you know, funny. I mean, I guess it's not all super serious stuff. I mean, I hear some horrifically hilarious stories from my mates when we're out running, but I think it's just good. I think it just feels more real.
So I'm going to pull you up on something that you said earlier, Mike. You said, I go out with some really good runners and I'm not really a very good runner. I dispute that because I think we have to encourage people to run. And by saying you're not a good runner is maybe putting other people off, because if you run, you run. You know, I don't see there as being a good or a bad. The fact that you've got out, I think, is great. Would you kind of agree with me, or do you still think that, you know, there's a difference?
I think you called me on my own stuff there, and I think you did right. I mean, we always talk about, if you take one step, you're a runner. So I should never say things like that. I think good is always a matter of perspective, and no one thinks they're good unless they're blooming.
I think that's it. I think we're all very self-deprecating, aren't we? And you're a classic case of that, because you're a great runner. You're a really nice guy. So maybe that is because you do the run in the morning. I don't know. But, you know, you always seem very calm and collected and happy and lovely to me. So I'm interested to see this stressful Mike you speak of, because I've never seen him. But certainly, you know, I think, you know, we all compare ourselves, don't we, to other runners. And yeah, you're right. I look at, you know, these speedy ultra runners, and I think, oh my God, I'm just nowhere near it. I mean, I'm not as good as them in terms of speed, for sure. But, you know, we have to kind of check ourselves, don't we?
I think we're just very British about it. I don't know anyone who would sit there and go, I'm a really good runner.
I think I might know a few, actually.
I mean, I just, if somebody says to you, run, I said, yeah, I love running. And, you know, I always say I'm not particularly good at it, because I just don't feel like, it doesn't feel very me to go, yeah, I'm pretty amazing at it, by the way. Pretty awesome, kind of a big deal. Yeah, no, that's not very me.
I'm sorry, that was really mean pulling you up on that. And I only meant it to kind of, I suppose, highlight that, you know, everybody can be a runner, and we shouldn't put ourselves in little boxes like that. Tell me about what you eat when you go for a run. Are you, you know, you're pretty strict with your nutrition, or do you just grab and go?
I mean, yeah, I am living proof that you can't outrun a bad diet. And I love food, and I just love all different types of food. Whilst on the run, I've gotten better. I used to eat pepperamis and strawberry milkshakes. I've got a bit better than that. I've stopped using kind of gels and specifics. I do take salt tablets, and I'm manage obviously electrolytes and things like that in terms of the drinks that I take. But mainly it's just whatever I can get. Salt and vinegar crisps are a good one. I like Fulfill bars. I'm quite content with those. And I'm a big fan of cheese. You can get these little cheddar blocks that they put in kids' lunch boxes, and I really enjoy those, because particularly in the later stages of ultramarathons, I find it difficult to digest anything sort of heavy, like bread and things like that.
Yeah.
And I'll have flapjacks maybe in the first half, but again, I struggle with that in the second half. I love fruit, so grapes and watermelon in particular are brilliant on an ultra. and oranges. I got really into oranges at the not oranges, sorry, satsumas at the weekend. They were good.
Fruit nuts can be good, can't it? Yeah, nice and easy.
Yeah, fruit can go two ways. I remember my very first ultra, I had 8 plums at the 30-mile aid station, which I don't know what I was thinking.
Didn't end well, I'm guessing.
I just had a very sore stomach for the rest of the race, shall we say.
Say no more.
But bananas are good. Bananas are good. Obviously, you've got your 7 different types of sugar, haven't you? So, yeah, I'm a little better than I was, let's put it that way.
Good. It sounds like you like your proper food over and above maybe kind of the gel stuff and the more manufactured foods for running.
Yeah, I've really found that. I think when you start running, you feel like you have to have gels, and it was really pushed on me to have gels, and I struggled with them because I didn't like the taste and I didn't like the texture, and there was a lot of sugar and sweets, and I just find that if I have sugar is good, and you know, things like in an ultra you often get like flat Coke towards the end and sugar towards the end, but I think, you know, what goes up must come down, and I think, you know, those big hits of sugar I sort of try and avoid. You obviously do get that with fruit, but I think it's just about monitoring what works for you. It's so personal, and I've listened to, you know, all sorts of different runners, and there are some people who swear by Percy pigs, and there are some people who swear by gels, and there are some people who just want to eat boiled potatoes with salt, and it's, you know, it's whatever works for you.
And sometimes it just depends on the day, doesn't it? One thing can work one day and then it really can't the next day.
Which is so frustrating, right? You're like, oh, I've got my nutrition plan, I'm gonna have exactly that, and then you get there and you're like, don't fancy that.
Yeah,
now.
That didn't this. Work.
Yeah, what am I gonna do? I do. We did when I did the last challenge that Susie Shaw and I did. We did this 19-hour thing, which your lovely husband came and helped us with. We stopped at a cafe and had a sausage sandwich about 7 or 8 in the morning, which was, you know, that was good. Hers was obviously a vegan sausage sandwich, I mean, she didn't recommend it afterwards. I think, you know, she just monstered the whole thing and then went, yep, no, feel rubbish now.
It seems like a good idea at the time, doesn't it? And then, yeah, 10 minutes later, you're kind of ruining the moment you shoved that food down your face.
I think my key is I actually overate a lot during the first number of ultras that I did, because I was so, everyone's saying eat, eat, eat. And I was finding myself just forcing food down. And I think, for me, I sort of go a little bit slower with it now. It's a bit more little and often. As soon as I finish the race, I turn into an absolute savage. I eat everything.
Good for you. Listen, you talked about some of the challenges that you've done, particularly with Susie. What's your biggest favourite mad challenge that you've done?
Oh, good one. So I did 7 marathons in 7 days. That was really fun, because it was just so strange and bizarre for me to do. I'd never done anything like that before. And actually getting up each day and going again is really tough. And I wasn't training properly. I was in all the wrong shape, and eating terribly. Didn't really know what I was doing. I was a bit of a novice. And the 7th marathon was London Marathon. And I got there and I was like literally limping to the start line. And my brain got me through that as opposed to my body. And I was really proud of myself for doing it. You know, you get those moments, you go, well, I'm actually a half decent person. See, I am a good runner. There
yes,
you go.
Yes, we got there.
I'll take that. But I think probably my favorite is probably the 100 miler I did in Florida, which was just done just before Christmas, because it was a few, like, we went to another country with a few friends who were just running friends. I didn't know them through anything else apart from through running, and we stayed out there for 4 days, and we saw the sights, we had this massive adventure, and it was overseas, and it just felt like really cool. It was something really new and different that I'd not done before, and I got such a rush off that.
It sounds really cool, Mike. I mean, the fact that you're in Florida, I think, was a big plus point for that one.
Yeah, it's called the Daytona 100, and you start at Jacksonville Beach and you end up at Daytona Beach. And it, if you look on Strava, it's literally a straight line. So you set off and keep the sea on your left. And it's pretty much how you go there. And it's just a very, very strange ultra. And it was so spread out. So you'd go a long time without seeing people. And I had my first hallucination. I was looking at the palm trees. This is about sort of 2 or 3 in the morning. And in amongst the palm trees, I saw this giant emu. And he was as big as the palm trees, and he looked really friendly. And I was just, "Oh, hello, mate. How are you?" And I was like, "Oh, I'm talking to a giant emu. He doesn't exist, does he? I should probably eat some food." So yeah, that was it. Was just, but you get your little stories like that. You're like, that's a pretty cool
And did the
adventure.
emu say anything back to you?
No, it was the moment I said hello to him that I realised he wasn't real.
Oh, crushing.
I was a bit disappointed because he looked really friendly.
Sure he was. I'm sure he was. He was egging you on, that's for sure. That sounds like a beautiful run, actually. And obviously going out to the States now is becoming a bit more of a frequent thing for you because you've got the Run Show US now, haven't you, as well?
Yeah, so we've got a running show, a snow show, and an outdoor show out there, and we're looking to get a few more. And so this is the difficulty, because I really struggle with this, because I'm like, I have to fly out there to sort these shows, but sustainability wise, I struggle with that. And you can offset stuff, but do you really need to go? So I have to really think about how many flights I take and who we use and using local suppliers and all of that kind of stuff. But if you think too much that way, you never do anything. I think it's important to do stuff, but question why you're doing it and what you're doing to offset the impact of that, or minimize the impact of that, should you do it. So, but I mean, for us as a business, we want to have an office out there. We want to do multiple events in multiple cities. They have the same outdoors cultures that we have. They have the same mental health and obesity crisis that we have. So our events out there can make a real difference to people's lives. So I think it's important to do it. And yeah, we're having a great time out there. I literally, before the weekend, I had a mad week last week. So I flew out on Monday to Denver for some meetings with this group that I'm hoping to do something with, and then back to Vermont for some more meetings, and then back home. And I landed at 9 p.m. No, sorry, 9:50 p.m. in Heathrow, and then I had to drive out to Wales for the Howham, which was the 30-mile ultra. So I got there at 1 o'clock in the morning, and the ultra started at 7 a.m. And I was like, "What am I doing?"
I think that's a sign of a true ultra runner, Mike, that kind of behavior,
Oh,
absolute madness.
you get there, and it was the most beautiful race. I mean, running through the heart of Wales, trails that I would never normally go to. Really fun group of people that I was running with, and I was just like, it's actually the best way to end a week like that. Is to it sounds a bit mad to go and do that straight afterwards, but actually, it's almost when you've had quite a frenetic week that's very business. It's nice to go out and just have fun. And I loved it. It was so good.
And when you've been traveling as well, and you've been on planes and stuck in a car, actually just getting out into nature is probably the best thing for you, isn't it, after all of that?
Yeah, use your legs. It does make a difference. And I'll often run commute into work. And I think, again, those things, dropping one of those journeys, makes you feel better. But it stops you going, "Oh, I've got to go to work. I need to have that." It actually reduces your time commitments, because instead of doing your commute and your run, you kind of combine them. So you're actually saving time.
Absolutely. And then you're meeting even more people out on the hills, and your network grows ever bigger, Mike.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, I love it because I love chatting to runners, because I could just do it all day. It's like, that's the problem with the running show. Is I just don't do any work. I just want to chat to
You've done all the hard work surely in advance, so you're allowed to go around and chat to people again.
Well, there is a danger that and this is what I always tell the guys in the team with events, because before the event trade, so when we get to January for this January show, we would already have signed the headline speakers for next year's show. And we'll already be talking to all of our exhibitors about coming back for next year. And if you're not careful, you're already on to the next one before this one's finished, and you don't actually ever celebrate the wins. And I think that's quite important. It's like with runs, you often focus on getting to the end. You forget to enjoy the journey. That's what I love about ultra running is if I see something beautiful, I stop and I look at it and I take a picture, and that's okay. It's not necessarily about charging at full pace to the end. Certainly not for me. I mean, I know some people do run at that level, but you know, for me, it's about stopping and enjoying the journey.
100%. And yeah, like you say, with your shows, you have to really celebrate your achievements. I mean, what you've done, what you've put together, and what you've given the running community is phenomenal. And we all love it. So you've done an absolutely fantastic job, Mike. Can you tell us when the next show is going to be? You said January.
Yeah, I can. I think the first thing I'd say is it's not me. It's we've got a team of people that do it. And actually, the National Running Show, this was the best National Running Show that we've ever had this year, and it's the first one that I've not really been directly involved with. So Natalie, Rachel, and the team behind it, Hannah and Co. They look after everything, and we have a sales team and marketing. Oh, I mustn't forget content, or they'll tell me off. Kate and Alex. These guys, they do all the work, and they put it together, and it's definitely not a one person gig. But yeah, the next one is 20th and 21st of January up at the NEC. We have some pretty awesome speakers already confirmed, including Kelly Holmes, Jamie Bolsch, David Weir, Susie Chan, Vassos Alexander. So we've got some good ones there. There are more very exciting ones coming too that I can't quite reveal just yet. But yeah, that one's a good one. But I mean, ahead of that, we've got our cycling show coming up in June. We've got a couple of snow shows in October, one in Birmingham and one in London. So yeah, we do loads now. We've even got an equine show. We've got an outdoor show. So yeah, we're trying to take over the world.
And good for you. And you're doing a really good job at it. And I can't wait for the running show because it's honestly like one of the highlights of my running year. So you and the team are smashing it. And yeah, I can't wait for January, Mike. So
Oh, thank you.
thank you for talking to me. And thank you for being honestly one of the nicest people I know. And happy running. And no doubt we'll catch up very soon.
Awesome. Well, thanks for having me on.
Anytime. Thank you, Mike.
Take care.
Bye
Bye.
bye. Thanks so much for listening. And don't forget to leave a review for the Vegan Fitness Runner podcast. Please subscribe if you don't want to miss an episode. And remember, you can find out more about all my guests and further information on all the topics covered over on the website veganfitnessrunner.com. Thanks again, and bye for now.